Good evening, everyone. I just want to welcome especially those that are new to Wildwood. I hope you feel as a family here. Wasn't it amazing to see that they're coming from the four corners of the earth here, China and Belgium and all over. It's just one thing I really like about Wildwood. It's a foretaste of heaven. Saints gathered from all around the world. That's what heaven's going to be like, right? This is a place that's very meaningful to me. I first came here in January of 2000. And I know everyone's got different paths of how the Lord brought you here, a different story. And I want to share a little bit about my story this evening. You know, when I was a kid, I was very inquisitive. I was raised a Roman Catholic, and I remember quizzing my professors. And there was different priests that we called them fathers that would come in and try to teach us, even though we often were not very interested. And I remember one time asking him, "Father, why is it that we go to church on Sunday when the Jews go on Saturday and Jesus was a Jew?" And he was stunned by that question. I was in fourth grade. I remember asking it. He didn't really know what to say. He's like, "Well, Jesus rose on Sunday, so we go to church on Sunday." I was like, "Okay, all right." I was inquisitive enough that I found enough holes in the Roman faith that I was losing confidence as the years went on. And by the time I was 16, I had lost all confidence in that church I was raised in, and I didn't want to go anymore. And so thankfully, I was quickly able to get my driver's license. And I said, "You know what, Mom and Dad? I like to drive myself to church, and I'd like to go Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And they said, well, because I was usually out late on Saturday night and didn't want to wake up in the morning, and so they said, okay. I never went to church again. I would go in, 3 o'clock, I'd grab the, don't get any ideas here, young people, I'd get the bulletin, and I'd come home and say, I was there. Okay? I mean, there wasn't really much of a sermon in a Catholic service. It was pretty easy to say what was going on. Well, we read a couple psalms, and we went up and got the Eucharist and went home. You know, sermons were about 10 minutes long, so yeah, they never asked me what the sermons were. Anyway, you know, when I finished high school, I was through with Christianity. I saw inconsistencies all through the faith, and I saw a people that were living contrary to what I would think would be in the Bible. It seemed very contradictory, and when I look on television, I never met a Protestant before, so understand, I grew up and I graduated high school without ever meeting a Protestant, and I didn't know what they were. I didn't know I didn't understand the history of the Reformation. I thought, like most Catholics, I guess, just a bunch of rebellious people that left the mother church or something like that, you know, that are kind of weird, and you see them on television, you know, falling down and, you know, doing all sorts of things, speaking in tongues, and I thought the Protestant world seemed pretty crazy to me, so I don't want any part of that, and I'm pretty through with this Catholic business here, so I'm done, right? So I was leaving high school, leaving my parents, going off to college with an open mind to experiment and try anything that was out there. And so I was reading books and doing different things, and I got into drugs, and I was getting into psychedelics and hanging out with hippie crowds and going to concerts and all sorts of things. Got really into music, started playing music, and my life was, you know, pretty average college kid, I guess, in the U.S., pretty worldly life. I was got very deeply into, like, I guess we would call it spiritualism. I wasn't really aware of that type of term, or New Age. I wasn't aware of that, really, but those were probably concepts I was into, more Eastern religions. It intrigued me. It was something new. I thought, well, maybe there's something there. And through the psychedelics and the hippie crowds and these different experiences that I was having at concerts and so forth, which was at times out-of-body experiences and very different things that were undeniably spiritually powerful and things that I had never experienced before, I started to wonder, maybe there's truth in this, and there's a direction here. So I started getting more and more in-depth with it, reading books on Eastern religions. But to be honest, the more I read, the more confused I got. And I read, I don't know if you've ever looked at the Bhagavad Gita, but this is the book of the Hare Krishnas, and it's quite confusing. I tried reading it, and I thought, you know, I don't really get it, to be honest with you. And the more I searched, the more, you know, it just seemed very ambiguous and nothing very concrete. And so inside my heart, I knew that there was really, I really didn't know anything. And I wasn't getting any answers in any Eastern religions. But through this experience of mine, of just at least being open-minded, it did open some doors for me to reconsider Christianity. Quite a turn of events that occurred. A friend of mine, he was a guitarist. He played in a lot of bands in Madison, the University of Wisconsin. He was accomplished. He was older than I was. I was good friends with his younger brother. We got together. We got this geodesic dome out in the country with no running water. And we started living out in the country. The first time I went on this property and met this guy, he had clay smeared all over his stomach, and he hadn't eaten in 3 days. And he was, you know, like on this spiritual high, right? And so we were doing all sorts of, you know, spiritualistic things, you know, trying to forecast the future. And all. I was writing astrology charts, and I was all over the place. And we were playing music and having parties out there and everything. I would consider myself a nonconformist to the regular way of life. I dropped out of college because I didn't really see a career path that I was very interested in, and I just wanted to play music and live in the country and do drugs. To be honest, that was probably the direction of my life, and I still have friends that are doing the exact same thing, the ones that are still around. And so, Delson was really the leader of our group, and we were starting a band and so forth, but he was getting some mental imbalances, and it was growing apparent. Another friend of ours was in drug rehab, and I was watching all of this, and I started thinking, you know, drugs really aren't the answer to life, and to depend on that seems quite like a crutch. So Delson left to, you know, suddenly he vanished. I wondered where he went. He went to the West Coast one time, and then the whole thing just started crumbling apart. And one time he says, you know what, I'm through with all of this. I'm going to Europe. And he started hitchhiking around Europe, following this band around and doing different things. So we left this geodesic dome. We moved back to the city. I was back playing video games, playing basketball, and working a job. And months had passed. Didn't see the guy. Suddenly he comes knocking on, opening up my friend's apartment door, and I'll never forget the day, because he had long hair down his back, kind of like white man's dreadlocks. He hadn't washed his hair in probably 3-4 years, and he had cut off that hair and was holding a King James Bible in his hand. And Delson was regarded by me as an extremist. It was one thing I liked about him. He was really into everything, and he was always the extreme on everything. So I didn't know him in these days, but I know when he first went to college, he was like a Republican that would wear a suit and carry a briefcase to class. Then he became a hippie and did the other extreme and just totally changed. And now he's got his hair cut off, and I thought, okay, Delson has finally lost his mind. Now he's gone over the deep end. He's carrying a Bible. He's off the deep end. I thought, what on earth has he come up with here? So I was talking like this probably. What happened? You know, and he looks at us, and we were just in there playing video games and so forth. And he says, well, I was in Europe and I went to a vegetarian restaurant. And I met this man named Jose Berbal, and he and I got to talking, and I stayed with him a couple days, and he told me about this farm in Italy, and I went to this farm, and I really liked it there, and I stayed there for 3 months, and I didn't go to any of these concerts. And I thought, huh? And I was like, what on earth? Are you serious? That was the worst news I've ever heard. I was like, Delson, we live in Wisconsin. There's farms all over the place. Why'd you go to Europe to go to a farm? I was like, you didn't go to the concerts? Man, I was just dying to know how those concerts were. It was like our idol. And he was on this farm in the dirt, and I was like, I don't understand it. He's like, well, let me explain it. These folks are living off the land. You know, these are, and they grow their own food. They're up in above the pollution line. They have their own well, water source. And they're very spiritual people. And I can see they've got a relationship with God that I've never seen before, and they're living a life that we all talk about. Right? They're doing it. They're eating from food from the ground right there, almost 95% of growing their own food. I was like, really? And who are they? He's like, well, you know what? It's interesting. They're Christians. And I thought, Christians? What kind of Christians would live like that? He said, well, they call themselves, and he says the name of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Italian. And I looked at him like, huh? He's like, well, I was like, what is that? That's an Italian church? And he said, no, well, they have some of those here in the United States too. They call themselves Seventh-day Adventist. I was like, Seventh-day, what is that? Are they Christians? He said, yeah, they're Christians. Doesn't sound like a very Christian name of a church. What is that? Seventh-day Adventist. Doesn't even say Christian or Christ in it or anything. And I was like, what is that? Well, they go to church on Saturday. I was like, all right. What else? They believe Jesus is coming. That's what Adventist means. Oh, okay. Well, so what do you think? He's like, I'm going back. I'm through with all of this going to bars and drinking and smoking and all this stuff. He's like, forget about it. It's like, I'm on the way upward. And I'm going back there. I'm through with all this. We're not doing this band. We're not doing any of this stuff anymore. You know, I'm out of here. He's like, if any of you guys want to come with me, I'm going back. My visa ran out. I just had to come and refresh it. I'm going back. So I was like, wow. So I contacted him later, and I said, you know what? I'm interested to go. And to be honest, I wasn't interested at all in Christianity, but I was interested in this farm and these people he was talking about. So we threw our frame packs, packed up our backpacks, and took a train to New York. And was walking around Manhattan, and back then you could go to this. I found this address. It was not so easy to find addresses in New York if you haven't been there before. I'm just walking around looking for this address before Google Maps and everything, and find this place, and I hitchhiked to Europe. It was only like $150. I got this voucher, and I just waited in JFK Airport until a plane came along. I was like, they're like, you, get on. I was like, great. So we got to Europe really cheap, landed there. This Italian guy comes, picks us, brings us to the farm, and he sits down, and he looks at me, and he said, why are you here? And I didn't even know what to say. I was like, to be honest with you, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm just here. I'm happy to work on your farm. And he looks at me like, oh, man. You know, I've got a Grateful Dead t-shirt on, skeletons, shirts, and long hair. And Delson was his own case. He knew Delson, you know. And he's like, all right, you can stay. I was like, all right. He's like, you work in the farm. We start tomorrow. Get up at 6 o'clock and so forth. I was like, all right. I was reading a book at the time of about Buddhism, and it was very strict. What I was looking for was a solution to living a life and a regiment with yoga and discipline and diet and lifestyle and simplicity and living in the country to transcend to different levels of consciousness without the use of psychedelics and drugs. Okay, that's where my mind was. So I was like, I'm going to achieve this here with these Christians. Okay, so I'm going to try anyway. And it's really weird. I was like, maybe there is something with Christianity and Christians just don't realize it. So I'm basically there like giving Christianity a chance, trying to figure like there might be something out with this religion that the whole Christian world is just not aware of. Anyway, that was my mindset. So I was reading a book, and it was talking about sleeping on wooden beds and waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and doing strict stretching and yoga. And very tough lifestyle. I mean, it was another level. I was like, man, I don't know if I can do all that. and fasting and all of this stuff. So what this guy was saying, I was like, look, Alberto, I'm interested in your lifestyle here, and I want to live the way you guys live. So you just tell me what you do, what you guys do, and I'm going to do it. Tell me what's the deal here. You tell me to get up early, I'm going to do it. You tell me, he's telling me, like, don't drink water with your meals. I didn't know what he was talking about with that, but I was like, I'm not going to argue with you. I'm here to do everything that you're telling me to do. I'm going to eat your food. I'm going to have the same schedule, sleep like you guys do, get up like you guys do, work like you do, pray with you guys, do all of this stuff. I'm just here to check it out, see if there's anything of value there. And he's like, great. Okay, so in the morning, he would have worship with us, and he was teaching us about the life of Christ. We read through the Gospel of Mark over a 3-month period, and every day I would wake up early and I would do Well, to be honest with you, I was doing yoga, okay? Then I was going down to have prayer and worship with Alberto and Delson. And they were talking about the life of Christ. Now, let me tell you, studying the life of Christ, and he started bringing out stuff from this book called The Desire of Ages, and I was very weirded out by that book because the insights of the book were like talking authoritatively about what's going on people's minds in the days of Jesus. And I was like, how does she know that? You know, and they just kind of look at me. And Delson later would be like, they think she's a prophet. I was like, really? I was like, well, that makes sense. At least that answers it. Because it was kind of like, I didn't know how to relate to it. I had no problem with prophets or anything. So, in fact, when I was in college, I thought, I had this premonition that the Christian world seems very confused, and my understanding of prophets from the Bible were there to instruct the people, and I thought, why aren't there prophets today to clarify things from the Word of God since it's kind of old and help make it a little bit more plain sense? And I questioned God on that. Why isn't there an end-time prophet? So I was already there. When I heard about Ellen White, I was like, see, I knew there should have been, you know. So it was very easy to accept. I was already there. You know, I was like, of course, we needed that. The world is upside down. So I want to try to explain something here now. As I learned about the practical day-to-day life of Jesus through the Gospel of Mark, which focuses much on the healings, interactions with people, I was deeply impressed. And I felt like suddenly I'm feeling some direction here. Now, going back to how I thought Eastern religions became so ambiguous with no direction and nothing substantial to really put your finger on, I suddenly felt like Jesus' example was something I could see, feel, understand as a human, walk, you know, who's Buddha? You know, he's just a statue going like this. You know, what do I didn't quite... Christ became something that I realized as the ideal example for humanity. And then he saw I was interested, and he bought me a book, bought me a Bible. It was the Good News Bible. I had never read the Bible really before except in church. You know, in Catholic Church, you don't really read the Bible. You read from this prepared booklet, kind of like the Sabbath School Quarterly sort of thing. There's no Bibles there, right? You read out of that little booklet certain assigned scriptures, and it's always the same scriptures. Many scriptures are never read, ever, in the Roman Catholic Church. Just hand-selected scriptures from the leaders, okay? So I really had never read much of the Bible. I only read through they call it the Missalette, I think. And so he bought me that. He says, in the afternoon, I would like to, you know, give you time to read and pray and study. And I thought, okay. I would hike up to the top of this mountain behind his house. And he lived in an old house built in the 13th century. It was an old stone house that had been somewhat renovated. It was rustic living. St. Francis of Assisi lived down the road. You could walk over one of the most famous Catholic saints. You could walk over to his monastery where he lived. San Marino, San Leo, it was a very beautiful area. I was up on this hill, I could see all of this. And I was reading from the Bible. I read through from Matthew through to Revelation. And I got pretty bogged down in Revelation. I didn't know what I was talking about. But when I read through Matthew and Romans, it was over for me. In fact, I was so astonished by what I had read that I almost fell off this cliff. I suddenly realized that what I was reading was the Word of God. And suddenly the value of that book went from, I equated it with every other book, suddenly that book's value increased infinitely, and I realized that this is the book to help us all go to heaven and help us learn about God, and it was God's voice speaking to me. And so, you know, I left that place a changed person. They had put me on a lifestyle program, I didn't realize it, but I needed a lifestyle program, And I was open for it. I was getting good nutrition. I mean, this food was fantastic. I would go harvest all of this food and bring it into Veturia, and she would make these lunches from scratch, handmade pasta and sauces and all sorts of great food, best bread I've ever had. Just everything. I mean, the bread was their own wheat and spelt that they grew. They had used their own olive oil from olives that they had pressed. Everything was from the farm there. It was out of this world. Now, and that was the first time I ever had vegetarian food, to be honest with you. Delson's dad worked at a vegetarian shop. My dad was a butcher. So we were, you know, our families were a little bit different. In fact, just to clarify that, if Isaac, if you want to show that picture there, just so everyone understands where I grew up, my dad's name is Mike Hartley, and no, the previous one, and that's him on the left there. He owned a shop called Mike's Meats, okay, and I was his only son. I am his only son, and so I was there, and he trained me to be the sausage maker. So for about 4 years of my life, I was a sausage maker, especially in the winter time during deer season. I made a lot of venison sausage. You see ring bologna and hot dogs and, I could like 20 different kinds of sausage, okay. And I was getting chased around by pigs and all sorts of stuff. I actually hated the job. I had to clean out gut barrels, okay. So when you kill a cattle, you know, you're dumping all of their organs inside these barrels, and there's feces and blood all over the place, and then a rendering company comes and empties those, but then they're left with smear and so forth. Imagine a 90-degree day in about a room the size of the sanctuary, and me as a 13, 14-year-old, told by my dad, get in there and clean all of them out, scrub with soap and water, with flies and maggots all over, and I was just sweating. So that was my first job, and ever since then, I haven't complained of any job that I've ever had. All the jobs from that time in life has always been very easy compared to cleaning gut barrels at Mike's Meats in the summertime. And those barrels were heavy, man. They were metal. And I dragging those things around down to the kill floor, trying to clean them all out one by one. It was horrible. So, you know, and he's like, look, I don't expect you to be a butcher when you grow up. If you want to take over the shop, it's successful. It's financially there. But I understand if you don't want to do it. Go to college, you know, I got you, I'm supporting you on that. So it was like, it was either like take the shop or go to college and do something. But like what I was, anyway, I never really fit in either of those too well. But so that's what I was doing. So this food in Italy was really blowing me away. It was fantastic. So I was exercising, I was out in the sunshine, I was sleeping regularly, I was drinking water, wasn't drinking anything else. I didn't bring any drugs with me. I wasn't drinking or smoking or anything for 3 months I was there. And I would say after about 2 weeks, that's interesting, our lifestyle program's about 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, I felt noticeable changes in my body going on, like energy levels. I wasn't overweight. I was thinner. You know, I was a skinny kid. But my energy, I was kind of burnt out. I smoked pot every day for probably about 3-4 years, daily, regularly, multiple times a day and so forth. So I had lost the reality of what it felt like to be healthy. Like I hadn't been healthy or off of that for years. Suddenly I was off, and I suddenly felt this energy that had been long forgotten. Okay, I was literally bouncing off the ceilings in this place and looking for something to do. I was hyperactive. And I was just like, "What? Give me, Alberto. Give me something to do, man. I've got some pent up energy here." So he would give me work, and I was just out there farming and so forth. And it was a fantastic experience: growing food, digging it out of the ground, going inside, working with Vittoria, helping prepare meals, and eating these meals. I've never had that experience. The only experience I had was killing an animal, cutting off the meat, frying it on a steak, and eating it. It's a little different when you're growing food. You can understand, I guess. I was not really, you know, the whole thing with killing animals and everything, I was not really too into it. And so I was interested in being a vegetarian at that point. Pretty interested, I would say. Pretty interested. Of course, when I came back home and I didn't have Vittoria cooking for me or the farm there, I went back to meat eating. And I kind of backslid when I came back. But I had a life-changing experience there that I would not forget the rest of my life. It stuck in my head. I was like, I feel spiritually interested. I feel like I'm learning, I'm growing, and I feel energetic and healthy, and it's I mean, this is excellent. This is the way people should live, and this is the way I want to live. But I came back, and, you know, you go back to your same old family and friends and associates and, you know, towns and so forth, hometown, and it's very hard. I didn't know any Christians. Delson parted ways and went a different direction. He wasn't around, so all my friends were in the bars and so forth. So that's where I would go to hang out with them. And I would, my morals maybe went up a little bit, but I was back drinking and so forth. But in the back of my head, I couldn't deny what I had experienced. So I was in a spiritual warfare, a warfare of the flesh against the spirit. And I didn't know what to do. I moved to Madison with a couple buddies, and I would go to these college parties and so forth and bars and so forth. And I never felt like I belonged there. Anywhere I went, I didn't belong. I didn't know what to do, so I just wanted to get out of town. I just wanted to vanish. So I convinced a couple buddies, and we drove to Alaska. Thought, as far as let's go out there, you know, out to the wilderness. So we drove to Alaska, and I worked there for a summer, 4 months, and then I traveled all over the place. We worked on a fishing industry, and went to Hawaii for a month. Went down to California. We're just having fun. But to be honest, I wasn't, deep down I was getting depressed, and I was empty. I was doing everything that I could think of to have fun, but I could not forget my experience in Italy. So I was actually depressed, and I was dry spiritually. And I came back to Wisconsin, and all I had left was that. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I looked at the college courses again, and I thought, I can't do it. I don't want to do that. I don't want to sit in an office 9 to 5. I don't feel motivated for any of that. I want something higher. I want to do something else. Didn't know what to do. Thankfully, the Lord brought Delson back to Wisconsin. Before I go there, Isaac, go ahead and show that next slide. We don't need to look at the sausage this whole message here. This is the restaurant in the bottom right-hand corner. This is Country Life Restaurant. This is run by the Seventh-day Adventists. It's an OCI institution. The Country Life restaurants in Prague and Basel, Switzerland, and they were in Paris and London. And this is really the work that brought me and my friend into the truth. If it wasn't for the restaurant, we would have never found the farm. Right? We needed the city inpost to point us to the outpost. And that's why I'm here. Without that, it wouldn't have happened. I mean, maybe another way, but we would not have responded to a door-to-door evangelist or Bible worker or something like that. It had to be something through health. That got us, and country living. And so Delson comes back to Wisconsin. I remember over Christmas visiting his family. His dad was my tennis coach, so I was really close to them. So I went over and was hanging out with those guys, and I asked Delson what he's doing. He says, well, I'm down in Tennessee. I was like, Tennessee, really? And he's like, I'm on an organic farm with some Adventists. I was like, really? He's like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I'm twisting wieners and making sausage, and I'm drinking beer, and I'm doing the same old thing that we were always doing. He's like, uh-huh. He's like, why don't you come down south? I was like, what is it down there? He's like, well, it's a farm with Christians. They don't do drugs. They do organic farming. It's a nice place. I thought, well, so what's that, like a hippie farm, but with Christians? He's like, yeah, kind of. I was like, that sounds good. So he's like, kind of like the folks in Italy. He's like, yeah, Jose is there. So this guy from Switzerland, who's a Spanish missionary who was there, married a Swiss girl, Anna Marie, had a child, worked there as the chef. He didn't want to be in the kitchen anymore. He came to Eden Valley to take an agriculture course. He wanted to get on the farm. Then he gets a job offer north of Wildwood here on a farm at an Adventist institution called Stone Cave. And so and this is Delson's sales pitch to come down there. That's a hippie. It's kind of like a hippie farm with Christians. So I say okay. So I go to the. I'm in the bar, and I'm having a few last drinks with my friends the night before coming down here. I've got long hair, and I'm wearing a Grateful Dead T-shirt. I pack up my Honda, and I drive. And I tell my dad, I was like, so long, count me out on the butcher shop. And I'm not going to college right now. I'm going to go down and farm in Tennessee. He's like, farm in Tennessee? I was like, yeah. And he's like, well, it's your walk, whatever you want to do. I was like, you know what, Dad, I really love you. Thank you. So he's like, how long are you going to stay down here? I was like, well, if I don't like it, I'll be back in 2 weeks. If I like it a lot, I'll come back in 2 years. He's like, all right, all the best. So I was like, so long. Driving down Tennessee, I land up on this property here, and I'm walking, looking around, I'm looking for Delson and these Christian hippie guys, and I don't see any of them. And anyway, what I was shocked, let me just tell you, I was shocked and I was a little upset by Delson of where he had brought me. Let me just be honest with you. I thought this is the last place on earth that I fit in. And look at, these people are weird around here, some of them. And this guy, you know, was freaking me out a little bit, and different people I was meeting. I was like, Delson, I was kind of mad. I was like, how? Kind of like that. And he's like, just relax. He's like, there's a good people down here. You know, just give it a chance. You know, we'll work on the farm. You got to meet this guy, Jose. So I met this guy, Jose, and I really loved Jose. If it wasn't for Jose, I would have never stuck at Stone Cave. So Jose was a live wire. If anybody know this guy, hyperactive, like my wife says, he's plugged into the 220. He's full of energy. And this guy's excited about everything. He's excited about everything about life, and he's excited about breakfast. You know, I never really ate much breakfast. This guy's like, man, let's have breakfast. Breakfast is ready. Let's go have breakfast, man. He's like, mama, mama, mama. He's just making noises and everything. I'm like, breakfast? So I was like, I like this guy, man. This guy's excited about everything. So I was just hanging with him, working with him, and living with him. And you know, Jose was trying to give us Bible studies. And so he'd sit down, because I was like, hey, Jose, I've been reading the Revelation, and I saw these beasts and everything. I was thinking maybe China is one of these beasts, and Russia, you know. What do you think? He's like, bueno, we need to study. It's like, you know this stuff? He's like, yeah, I'll teach you Revelation. So he starts teaching me Revelation. I couldn't understand a word that he was saying. And me and Delson would study and listen, watch, you know, he'd give us a lesson, and I'd look at him afterwards like, did you understand anything he was saying? Delson's like, no. Look, do you have a book that explains these things? and he's like, I've got, he's like, I got this book here, The 27 Fundamental Beliefs of the Seventh-day Adventist. I was like, can I have that book? I was like, yeah. So I took the book and I read it cover to cover. I was like, oh, okay, I got you. All right. I'm on the same page. I understand. So me and Delson, we got these books, and we started reading that, and we read The Great Controversy and different books. And The Great Controversy book shocked me, and it brought me to tears. You have to understand, everybody that I know is Roman Catholic. And here I'm reading about the truth of the matter, and it floored me. Floored me. Brought me to tears. I realized my family is deceived, and it was very hard to swallow. And when I would speak to my family, you know, in nice terms about just being, not about that stuff, but about being a Protestant Christian, believing the gospel and so forth, I was met with cursings. Right? I was yelled at. Pretty rough, you know. So, and it was like undue responses. I was very calm. And I got sympathy in some ways, by the way it all went down. Because there wasn't any pushing from my part, but it was like, you know, whatever you're selling, we ain't buying it here. Close the mouth, that sort of thing. It was tough. So when I moved down here, I was leaving everything. Left family, left friends, started completely anew. And that was not an easy thing. I tried to call my friends. It was just, we were just on different pages. So I was really alone. And at night, I remember I would weep sometimes and want to leave. You know, one night, because it was getting a little intense, and Delson and I weren't always getting along, and things were going on, and there were many times that I wanted to leave that place. One night, I was literally weeping in my pillow, and I thought, I'm just going to pack up, middle of the night, I'm going to go. But I couldn't do it. You know, something the Lord just kept holding me there, and I was like, what am I going back to, you know? Man, I just need to have a little patience, give God a chance here. And I stuck through it. And finally, the light started coming in, and I realized I was battling with what I was reading in The Great Controversy, and with what I was reading in the Bible. I realized that this is no laughing matter, and it's not just I'm not going to get into something like this in a lukewarm way. if I'm reading is true of heaven and eternity and the price of Christ in my behalf, how could I do anything else but to serve him the rest of my life? But it was not an easy decision. Finally, I had come to the point where I gave my life to God entirely, and I just asked him to use me in any way that he seemed fit. And me and Delson were both baptized. Pastor Atwood, God bless him, he was a good Bible teacher, I could say that. He gave us Bible studies. Delson and I drilled the poor man relentlessly with a million questions about aliens and all sorts of stuff. I mean, we were all over him. we were all mixed up, right? And he was so patient, give us a Bible answer. You know, we're like, man, that guy's patient. And Delson and I, we could be a little antagonistic. We try to get on his goat a little bit, and he never. You know, I was like, man, that guy, wow, he's impressive, you know. And he seemed really humble with me. Driving, for me, I didn't understand the president of an institution driving like 45 minutes to come and like give me a little Bible study and pray with me. I thought, what kind of person does that? You know, I really thought it was very amazing. And so I was baptized in September of 99, and at that point I was 100% committed. And I was talking to the Lord about places I wanted to go to, and I started by saying, you know, I know the Lord brought us people here different ways. God brought us here to Wildwood. And I was coming to church here, and I love Pastor Atwood and a few of the people I knew here, but deep down I didn't really want to come here. I wanted to go to the Black Hills Mission College, where David Ashrick had been and other guys that were preaching now and getting involved in evangelism. And so Jose wanted me to go there, and I filled out an application, and I was accepted there. And I was on my way to Black Hills. I would have never come to Wildwood, probably. But the night that I got the acceptance letter, I knelt down and I prayed, because I was battling with this thing. I thought, did I just choose that? Because I just kind of like wrote some schools on a list, and Wildwood was number 7 on the list, and I really only put it there because I knew health was important. But I said, Lord, I don't know how to find your will. I'm very new at all this. But if you make it clear to me, I will do anything. Amen. If somehow you, I don't know how you show people things, but if you somehow show me what you want me to do, of course I'm going to do it. I'm willing to do anything. I'm not out here to run my own show here. I'm here to serve. I just don't know how to find your will. Make it known, and I'm not going to Mission College. I'll go somewhere else. The next morning at 7 o'clock, I was praying and having the similar thoughts. Jose comes rushing into my room, and he's like, James, Pastor Hat was on the phone for you. I was like, why is he calling me in the morning like that? That's kind of weird. So I went in, and I got on the phone, and he said, James, Pastor Atwood. I was like, good morning, Pastor. What's going on? He's like, well, my son's going to go to Colorado, and I've been praying a lot lately about I need an assistant here, someone to work with me. And what would you think about coming to Wildwood working with me? I was like, huh? I was shocked. I didn't know what to say. I was like, I got to pray about that, Pastor. I got to go. Okay, bye-bye. And I looked at Jose like I saw a ghost. My face was white. I was pale. I had to sit down because the Holy Spirit just told me what he wanted me to do. It wasn't Pastor Atwood. God spoke to my conscience like a thunderbolt when Pastor Atwood said that to me. I was like, oh, you kidding me? Number 7? No, I was like, Pastor Aaron wants me to go to Wildwood. He goes, bueno, you should do it. That's fantastic. I was like, all right, well, you're supportive. Let me go to my room. So I kneeled down and I prayed. And it was one of those prayers that when you're kneeling down, on my way down, I already knew the answer. I was just like a formality. I was like, Lord, all right. I was like, that was impressive. Now, it wasn't just a phone call. It was things lined up in my heart about the medical missionary work and the providence of it and the impression that the Holy Spirit struck me with at that hour. I took the letter to Mission College and I ripped it up. And I threw it away as I'm going to Wildwood. So I moved here in January of 2000, and this place has changed my life. And it's just such a privilege to work for God here. I've had an opportunity to travel and visit different ministries around the world, dozens of them. And this is a real special place. And I believe that God wanted me to be here so deeply that I would not ever leave this place unless God made it equally clear as to equal evidence of the evidence that he brought me here. With equal evidence, I will, of course, follow the Lord and move elsewhere. There are many times I was tempted to leave. I was offered 3 times by different individuals that I met while I was director of education here to pay my way all through Adventist College. All 4 years through the theology, people wanted me to be a pastor. Two people I didn't even know just approached me and says, I'll pay all your way. And it was strong temptations there, but the more as I gave time and I prayed about it, I never felt like God was calling me to be a pastor. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but I just didn't feel... I was torn on that for years, to be honest. But then I finally really realized that that wasn't my calling, that God wanted me to be involved in this work. And I always felt like, if not me, who's going to do it? Because to be honest, I looked around and I didn't see a lot of people in this kind of work. And I'd go over to Collegedale and I'd meet people, young people, and I didn't see much interest in doing this kind of work. And I thought, the more I learned about Adventists, I thought all Adventists were country living, organic, vegetarian, and everything like that. And then as I learned more and more, I thought, well, there's very few that are doing this kind of work, and I guess God just called me to help out in this corner of the vineyard and to pitch in my work, what I can do. I remember being on my knees in the farm one time and pleading with God to direct my life. I told him, I said, I'm willing to do anything. If you want me to dig potatoes the rest of my life, I'm really happy to do it because I do like farming. I came here, I worked part-time with Pastor Edward, part-time on the farm, and just got more and more involved. That's kind of the tendency of this kind of institution. You get more and more involved. The longer you stay, the more you get into things. And I grew on me really fast. And so I've met hundreds of people here from around the world, probably 1,000. I've got so many friends from 4 corners of the world, and it's so awesome to have that kind of support, a new family. Christ is very sincere when he says, if you leave your family, I will replace it 1,000 times, 100-fold. And that's what's really happened. I've had mothers in Israel here. I've had fathers. I've had grandmas and grandpas and friends and sons and daughters in the faith. And it's just totally changed my life. I've met my wife here, and I'm so happy to be married to someone equally committed to the mission and to have a family here and a daughter. And to be, I would never turn back by God's grace. It's been 17 years now. It's crazy to think. This is my 17th year at Wildwood. I can't imagine doing anything else, being involved in God's work. We're living in times that I believe he's trying to finish things up. And it's so awesome to be involved in this work. I've never had a dull moment in my life here. I don't know if you've noticed that. Being a Wildwood, it's not a boring place, I don't think. I've never found it that way. But not knowing what God's going to call you to and being open to do whatever he calls you makes life so interesting. And just having a living, not making a 5-10-year plan and not being willing for God to redirect your steps, I know it sounds weird that I'm saying that, and then I'm also saying I've been here 17 years, because I know many people yeah, but if you have that attitude, you're never going to leave. I was like, but I don't think that's true. You know, I am still here, so it's hard for me to say, you know, that God will show you if you're open to and lead you elsewhere. But I just haven't felt that call. I would be very happy to serve him in another field. But for now, I'm here, and I'm happy to be here. And anyway, students, I want to encourage you. From my experience and all the friends that I've had coming through the program here, one thing I'll make note as I'm finishing here is that the devil works on you especially hard in the beginning. He doesn't want you to be here. This is a good place. There's a lot to be gained by people you meet here and a lot of things to learn and a lot of preparation for service, and I don't think the devil likes that. And so he gives trial and obstacle to get you out of here, and he succeeds. You know, I've seen it many times. God's got a work for every single one of us somewhere in his vineyard. And it's a fun experience to find out what that is and to get working with the Lord and doing it. It's just awesome. And I didn't share the story of this accident before I came to Wildwood, but as I was meditating on where to go before the lightning struck and Pastor Atwood called me, I was on a tractor, and the Lord saved my life before coming here. I was bounced off a tractor, ran over. I had my head run over, my chest ran over, my whole body was crushed, all my ribs got squashed like a pancake, my knee got snapped in half. I was about torn to pieces 3 weeks after I was baptized. And there's a statement from Ellen White that, actually if you flip through, I've got it on the screen, but never does someone leave the ranks of the enemy without assailing his attacks. That's the house, by the way. In Italy, another one. If you go through another one here, I think there's a, well, you know that one. Yeah, never does one leave the ranks of the of evil for the service of God without encountering the assaults of Satan. Never. You've got an enemy when you join the ranks of the Lord. I found that definitely to be true. I don't know how I got bounced off that tractor. It seemed impossible. I was holding on strongly. I think I let go slightly as I got in a little hairy situation and I got bounced off. And dragged underneath. I was pulling a bush hog. I should have been chopped into 1,000 pieces. I was dragged underneath the tractor around a field with no one around. And I thought I was dead. I was a goner. Right? I turned around. I felt wind on the back of my head. And I was getting dragged, pulled by my ankle. And I turned around and looked. And I was this close to the bush hog blades. Just right there. I could smell it, you know. I mean, I was done, and I thought that was the end of it. I thought that was the end of my journey, and I was saying so long to this old world, and I was saying, and I remember my foot started coming out, and it was like a guillotine coming on the way down to chop my head off, and I remember crying out verbally, "Jesus, I'll see you in heaven," and. And then I just clinched, ready for it, and just then, poof, the tractor hits a tree and stopped. And the blade stopped, foom, 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 foom. And I was feeling around like, oh, do I have all my limbs? And I was coughing up blood, and I had bruised my lungs and broken bones and tore my ligament, my knee, and my jaw was offset. And I looked like I had been run over by a tractor. And it was amazing though. I'll cut it short. It was hard to get out from under the tractor. I got out. I could hardly breathe at all. I couldn't. It was small little breaths. And the Lord had placed a crutch there, a stick with a Y on the top, just the right size for me, right next to that tractor. I picked it up. It was like the perfect crutch that you could imagine. And it stuck right under my arm. And I had to hop, you know, like this. Like a kilometer. It was a marathon. It was rough. But anyway, got it there, you know, and the Lord, he, you know, amazingly, just to throw this in here, not one rib was broken. The whole rib cage went like that and popped back into place while a tractor ran over my chest. And no ribs were broken. They're more tendency to break if they have a sharp impact. But God made him flexible, and the cartilage cracks and pops and everything, but it popped back into place. It might not be all, like, totally straight, but it's mostly there. And and I'm thankful that he saved my life. And I don't know why. I just think the enemy was assailing me. That was the tractor, old Ford tractor. So old friends, he and I. I'm not afraid. I will get on a tractor again, but it was a little concerning after that. Dangerous equipment. I wasn't following the rules. I was too hasty. I was trying to drive that thing in fourth gear. I was told not to go past two, and I was just flying around on it and so forth. So, just like, you know, anyway. So I'm thankful to still be here and have all my limbs and my head on and most of the way anyway. And if that would have been the end of it, it really would have hurt. And I was questioning God on that. But I had come to peace with him on it. And to be honest, I was looking forward to the second coming of Christ. At that moment, I thought, I'm going to die really quick. I'm going to be asleep. I'm going to open my eyes. I'm going to see Jesus coming in the clouds. What could be better than that? Right? And I thought, that brought me a lot of peace. I thought, you know what? That's not all bad. So I was kind of anxiously awaiting it for those moments. And then when it stopped, there was actually a slight disappointment. It was kind of weird. I thought, oh, like Ellen White coming out of a vision or something. You know, she's like, oh, darkness. I was thinking, what if I need rehabilitation? I'm going to be in a wheelchair the rest of my life. You know, I don't want to do that. But anyway, I was happy. I was like, oh, the Lord gave me a second wind here. I'm alive. I'm on my feet. And I'm ready to serve. So I'm just here as a servant. So I hope some of my experiences have been a help or a blessing to some of you. Jesus is coming very soon. Now's the time for us to work. It's a blessing to be in God's work. What better thing than that, okay? Let's kneel together. Father, I'm so thankful to reflect on the goodness of Christ, especially in my life, and I'm sure we all can think and meditate of how good you are every day to us. Thank you for being merciful and patient through all of my being in darkness. Thank you for pulling me out of that pit. And I just pray for a blessing, Lord, that you'd help me to be faithful. And pray for each one here, that you'd help us all to give our hearts to you and to not get distracted by things in the world, to not be allured and drawn aside from the path that Jesus has laid out for us. I pray you'd help each, especially student here, to get through difficult times, help them to be patient, rely on you and build and grow their faith and experience with you and be prepared for further works. Bless their experience, protect them, and just pray for this class, that they'd be unified, they'd support one another, lift each other up, that I'm just thankful you brought all these people from all over the world. Help us to, as a family, as an institution, as a church here, to be unified. And thank you for your grace and your mercy. Bless the Sabbath, Lord. Give us rest tonight. We thank you so much. We love you. Pray that you'd bless us this evening. In Jesus' name, amen.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.